Welcome to Sunday Night Flesh and Blood. I'm Nick, here with Colin. We are two-thirds of Team Raising Quell, a subsidiary of the Romping Club. Ryan can't make it tonight, but we're here with episode two. We're going to cover a couple quick topics to start. Like, we have some cool data from the Pro Tour. We're going to talk a little bit about like the KO Armory deck spoilers, but then we're going to jump into the topic we really want to discuss tonight, which is turn math. So yeah, it's a pretty simple topic, but I'm hoping we can, you know, go a little bit deeper into it. All right, Colin. So first of all, how are you doing today? Did you have a good weekend? Good Easter?
Yeah, it was a nice Easter. Had some family over, made dinner, made some butter chicken. It was nice.
Nice. That's a good Easter meal.
Yeah.
So, the first thing I wanted to talk to you about tonight, because we're just going to jump right into this, is some of the spoilers from the KO Armory deck. You know, you're a resident Brute main, a resident Rhinar main here. So when you saw, what is it, the Sash? I forget the full name, but the Sash. Then there's like that one card. Savage Sash, that one card behind it. And then there was like a weird, like, I don't know, kind of like a secret looking spoiler. It was really grainy, the picture. But a new Brute 6 attack card with some more Arsenal Disruption. But in general, what are your reactions to those spoilers?
In general, my reaction is, wow. Like, it's rare that you get three spoilers and all of them are this strong. You know, usually it's like, oh, which one of, like, there's one that jumps out to you, right? But I think in this case, they're all real strong. The Sash, I think, is definitely more of a KO card than a Rhinar card, at least at first glance. I mean, you could build Rhinar towards it, but the way Rhinar is currently built, if people haven't seen it, it's temper 2, and it has an action that makes your attack action cards that cost 6 or more power one resource less to play each turn, and you would destroy the Sash if you do that. So really, you know, it's to play when you want to go wide with multiple 6 power attacks, which KO does. But the reason it's so strong is because the temper 2. KO is currently run Tunic. And if you think of like one resource is equal to, you know, one block, Tunic is worth maybe 3 a game for KO. We get two resources off of it in one block. Whereas this, its floor is 3 because you got the temper 2. So it's automatically blocking 3. So real strong. Honestly, not super excited about it. You know, these decks getting their fridges and stuff like that. And like I said, it's more of a KO card, and I'm here for Rhinar. The other one, the blue, the Run Roughshod that was behind it, that's also a KO card, I think. Even though I think Rhinars will play it. It's a 1 cost, 5 power attack that can only be played if you've already discarded a 6 power this turn. So it's an absolutely crazy, like, Blood Rush finisher. Like, you know, a blue 1 for 5 or 1 for 7 after Blood Rush. Like, that's insane. Mm-hmm. But can only be played with another Fulfilled Clause is always risky. And then the other one that you mentioned, the kind of grainy one, which I'm not really sure what to think about. Like, I've heard it mentioned that maybe it's not real, but I don't think so. What do you think about that, first of all?
Oh, I hadn't come across that yet. But that...
No, I saw that on Twitter a couple times.
Dude, I would love it if there's some Rhinar player out there just like... throwing stuff out, you know, just like decided, all right,
that's what I'm thinking. Like, who's putting in the effort to make this? It's like the art looks like legit. They came up with a name and stuff. Good for them if they're like just duping.
Yeah, maybe it's fake, and maybe it was just like when the image was clear, it was like obvious that it was fake. So they're like, let's just make it blurry.
Yeah,
that's hilarious.
Yeah. Oh, I hope it, like, if that's true, it like makes its way to like Talishar, and people are practicing with it.
Yeah. Oh man. Yeah, yeah, in the lead up to the Battle Heart, I'm gonna be like, man, I gotta be prepared for this card that doesn't exist.
But yeah, what it is it's more Arsenal hate. It banishes an attack action card from a player's arsenal if that attack action card has less power than damage dealt by Strength Rules All, the card. Mm-hmm. And I think it's really cool that they've kind of isolated Brute as like the Arsenal hate class, it seems mm-hmm. like. You know, CNC has always fit in well. Then we got Send Packing, like an auto include in all Brutes. And now we got this. That's cool for a class that has no on hits, a way to like disrupt the arsenal. Mm-hmm. This card, I think what it's going to do in Rhinar, at least, is replace other 2 for 6s that people are currently running. Rawhide Rumble, Skullcrack, things like that. I don't really think it's exactly the same as like CNC, because this is attacking decks that have, you know, low powered like attack actions, like ninjas, mechs, things mm-hmm. like that, where CNC is more attacking people that run D-reacts. But yeah, it's cool. Yeah. Anytime we get new brute cards, I'm excited about it.
Yeah. Do you think the, I'm sure I'm overthinking this, but that card, like, so yeah, banish this card from Arsenal. If it has less attack than the damage dealt, it stays banished basically. Or no, it flips it over or something. Whatever. You just said it. But if there is like a D-react in Arsenal, and you just like, or no, let's say an attack reaction, because a D-react you just cover it up. If there's an attack reaction or like a card with no attack value, that doesn't count, right? Like it would just, you could let it hit and that card would just stay.
Oh, yeah. It specifically says banished of attack action.
Okay. Cool. That's good. But, so this person who made this fake card at least templated it correctly.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. But it doesn't, I do like that it says less than damage dealt this way, not like damage, like base damage by this card. Because technically you could like play like a double or triple barraging beatdown into this and banish like a crippling crush from Arsenal, even though it has 11 power. It should be sick.
That's awesome. Oh, man. Oh, that would be awesome. All right, cool. Well, yeah, I think, what was it? My first reaction when I saw some of those cards was similar to what you had said. Like the grainy one that may or may not be real. I was like, oh, okay. Like people at LSS understand that like Ninja is historically a really, really tough matchup for Reinar. So now he has like a very good tool into that class now.
Yeah. And with a new Ninja coming out, Mysteria, it makes sense.
And I think too, just like more of like the game design, it's just like they want us to be blocking. Like they want us to block with our cards. They don't want us to, they want us to play in the middle between like fatigue, like full fatigue and like Lightning Briar, right? Like, and this is just another, it's just another example of, you know, the game designers, the game developers saying like, yeah, you are going to block over the course of the game. Like you do not have an option. Because that's one of the things that back and forth is like one of the beautiful things about Flesh and Blood. So I'm all for it. You know, I also run, I play Warrior, so I, you know, got a lot of armor, so I'm fine blocking. Yeah, you know, Azalea might be.
It'll be interesting against Bolton, because like it does target a lot of your attack actions because they're low powered, but you block well enough that probably isn't an issue a lot of times.
I was thinking about it too, but it's like, there's definitely going to be like some forks that Reinar and or Brutes are going to put me in, because I also have to arsenal like my beacons and my Lumina Ascensions, because I can't let you intimidate them with Fleshbag. So it's like I have to arsenal my reactions a lot, like my attack reactions and other like offensive action.
And that's
cards.
Good.
Yeah, that is good. So if I see one of those, I'll just take it.
Against that card.
Maybe.
Yeah. the first card that came to mind for me, and gosh, this is always going to happen when it's just me and you on the pod. We're going to talk about Reinar versus Bolton.
Yeah,
first thing that I thought about was like your V turns. You know, if you got a V in Arsenal.
Yeah, well, that's another. I try not to Arsenal via the Vanguard against you, because if I Arsenal via the Vanguard against a Brute, what they should is as soon as I play it, if I have any cards in hand, they should just block the V, because they're getting at least two block. And minimum 4 to 5 extra damage from banishing that card. Most likely. I could be bluffing or whatever. Mm-hmm. That'd be like a horrible bluff. So
block the V with Fleshbag.
Yeah, they should block the V of the Vanguard with Fleshbag. So because of that, I try to arsenal like my chain Enders, right? Which could be like Lumina or like a Beacon or something. It could be like a Valiant Thrust that has 4 base, right? So it's like if you send that, I would need to block with a card to only take 3. So yeah, super interesting. I hope I didn't just give you a tip on ways to play against me and make you think that I got.
I had started recently against Boltons who are on Tunic into me, like really trying to emphasize that arsenal pressure when the Tunic's on 3. Like, you know, Arsenal a CNC or Ascend packing when their Tunic's at 1 or 2, and as soon as it gets to 3, play it. Just because a lot of them love that V Tunic turn.
Yeah, I mean, if your deck is built, if you're running, you know, Tunic and your deck is built around that, like, you have to maximize those V the Vanguard turns. or else your deck just ends up being kind of like, not like middling, but it's like that you're not reaching your ceiling. But yeah. I think a lot of brutes are, well, or a lot of, never mind, whatever. We don't need to talk about this matchup anymore.
let's talk about the Pro Tour.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So Pro Tour, I wasn't originally planning to talk about this tonight, but on Twitter, an actual good thing from Flesh and Blood Twitter this week, a not toxic thing, is somebody named Mark Henderson. He's a New Zealander living in Amsterdam. He posted this spreadsheet and like gave it to Nathan Crawford with the Pro Tour meta breakdown of like every hero, their win percentage, their win rates into every other hero. And it's just, I mean, it's just cool to see all the numbers. So I'll give my reaction first. My reaction first is that Bolton was tied for the number one winning percentage in CC with 62.5%. He was tied with Teklavossen, and there was one Teklavossen and 10 Boltons. So 10 Boltons is not a lot. The first thing I notice as I immediately went to like, okay, 62%, that's really high. How'd they do it a Dromai? 0% win rate into Dromai. So that means that of the 10 Boltons, a lot of them were dodging Dromai, which my strategy into Dromai has always been dodge or high roll. So it seems like they executed the dodge part. They did not execute the high roll part. So anyways, there's my reaction. But what do you think about some of this data?
Yeah, and I think that to your point real quick, I think it says that they played Dorinthia Dromai. How many times? Four times. Looks like Bolton was 0-4 into Dromai.
Yeah, that checks out.
So, yeah. I saw Bolton too, but I knew you were going to notice that. After that, you look down, other than Teklo, you see Dory, which we talked about last week, kind of coming out of nowhere. And she didn't just come out of nowhere in numbers. She came out of nowhere in win percentage. 57.81%, which, you know, it doesn't sound like a bunch when it's like, oh, you're still 50 something percentage. That's not like a crazy win percentage, but in Flesh and Blood, it really is. Yeah. These matchups are always so tight and stuff like that.
Yeah. And especially with the numbers, there's 28 Dorinthias and like,
yeah.
28 players, nearly 60% win rate. Like if you look at Dromai had 52 players. Dromai's win rate was 49% overall. Like most people at an event like this, most people are going to do poorly, right? Like, so just to have Dorinthia there at almost 60% with so many people playing it. Okay, it's just like, yeah, we said it a ton last week, but it's just like so impressive.
After that, you know, a bunch of decks with like, you know, 50 to 52 or 3% win rates. Reinar 46.5, you know, not great towards the bottom, but. But one thing that really stood out to me was Levia. We talked about it last week when we saw the conversion numbers. We're like, man, Levia didn't really convert. And the win percentage is almost even worse to me. 40% win rate. Levia just didn't win. A brute that I think when Heavy Hitters first came out, people might have thought was the strongest brute. I think now a lot of people have come around, or at least I've come around. I think she might be the weakest brute, and it's kind of a shame. Yeah. She's cool. But yeah, Levia didn't do great.
Yeah, it's like... that whole thing, it's like she might have the highest ceiling of any brute. You know, Levia consumed, whenever she flips into that demi hero, is like Levia consumed is like the most powerful card in the game. It's like you get to tutor a card every turn. Like basically a 5 intellect hero that can tutor. But it's just a little bit inconsistent, and that matters a lot. One last thing on this before we kind of move on, unless you have something else too. We didn't hear a lot about Victor because there wasn't a Victor in the top eight. There are 27 Victors and a 54% win rate overall, which was really impressive to me as well. And there's like a lot of debate of like, oh, Victor's super mid, Victor's not good, Victor's bad. And then people were like, oh, Victor is good. Like drawing cards is good. Like obviously. I think that Victor is very powerful. I know a lot of Team Blue Pitch was on Victor, and I'm sure a lot of them did perform well. But yeah, that was a really impressive win rate for me too, from a hero that didn't make the top eight and didn't get discussed a lot. Be ready for Victor at your events. It's real and it's good, even if you didn't hear about it.
Yeah, I think it's kind of settled science at this point that Victor is better than Bravo. There was like some debate after Heavy Hitters came out.
Watch it. Watch it. You're gonna drop. You're gonna make someone go crazy. So.
But I mean, Bravo only had a 33% win rate. That's like towards the bottom. It's like one of the bottom like 2 or 3. That's horrible. Yeah.
He had the same
and a
as
lot of Victor decks are kind of built. Yeah, exactly. And Arachne is someone people are writing off completely. Yeah. But a lot of these Victor decks are built like Bravo decks. Like they're pummeling. They've got Rouse in there. The difference is that, like you said, the card draw, the extra card is just crazy.
Yeah. And I mean, like, yeah, the extra card draw. And then when they're built to be able to use that extra card offensively, right? It's like, yeah. And I think Victor's biggest problem is sometimes you can give them a 5-card hand and they're like, pitch 3 reds.
Test
of strength and a trounce and something else, like just send some damage that you can block pretty easily. But like any deck that can draw cards and run CNC pummel tunic is good. Like that's just good. So like when that, I'm sure that when that deck is like humming, and you're the pilot of it, I'm sure it feels just like the most powerful thing you've ever piloted.
And I think it is a deck that rewards reps. So maybe that's why people were down on it earlier. Cause I think it's a pitch stack deck for sure. Cause you got to win those clashes. Mm-hmm. And you do run a decent amount of like losers, you know, like your blocks. And if you're on D reacts, your pummels, if you're on pummels, things like that. The way to get around that is like pitch stacks, you know, you win. And that's a high skill to do that. Maybe people, you know, have kind of come into their own with Victor doing that, you know, after a month or so of release.
Yeah, it is. It's super interesting. It's like, yeah, like you're saying, and maybe this is obvious. I just haven't thought about it before, but yeah, you're not just pitch decking for like, how am I going to close this game out with via damage? But like, I need to pitch deck to win some clashes and stack my block cards and my high powered attacks together. So yeah, that's really cool.
I'm pretty sure Brandon.
Oh, go ahead.
I'm pretty sure Brandon was talking about doing that to you the other day when y'all were practicing.
I think he was. I think it just like went over my head. I was like, pitch decking? Dude, I run Beacon of Victory. I've never pitch decked one time. So we call it threat stacking. It's when you pitch a Via Vanguard early and you know it's going to get shuffled around, but it's still in there.
Yeah.
All right. Do you have anything else you want to say regarding this, like this spreadsheet? If I could figure out.
No. People should go look it up on Twitter so they can just like really look at all the numbers. It's really interesting. We'll retweet it.
Yeah. The guy who put it together is Mark Henderson again. He's at Mark_H_SkyR, SKYR on Twitter. I gave him a follow. So go give him a follow. Sweet. This guy's getting free shout outs from our tens of listeners or for our tens of listeners.
How many listeners did we get last week?
Oh, I don't even know if I looked. I looked on like Thursday, maybe just on Spotify. And I think there was like 25 listens.
Nice.
Two of them were me one was me. And then I made my wife listen as well. I was like, did you like it? She's like, I don't know anything that you said, but, Colin and Ryan said a few funny things. I was like, nice. Success. she liked when you
tell your friend.
What'd you say to me when I was like, oh yeah, I was like, if I can't beat him, join him or whatever. And you were like, yeah, you're just a can't beat him kind of guy. She thought that was funny. So, you roasted me.
That's for you, Anna.
All right, cool. So yeah, let's jump into like the main topic, as Arsenal Pass says, main topic of the pod. And we want to talk about turn math, which is like a very basic and maybe it's discussed enough in Flesh and Blood where I'm sure that anybody listening to this knows what turn math is. But we're going to try to like peel back some of the layers and talk about some of the intricacies. And I'm sure both of us will talk like mostly from the perspective of the heroes that we pilot most frequently, being Bolton and Reinar, and then maybe throw in some other examples if we can think of them. So Colin, you go ahead because I will ramble for 10, 15 minutes about random Bolton cards if I try to just define this. But how do you define or how do you explain turn math in Flesh and Blood.
So if you ask me like that, how I would explain it, it would really be about maximizing your card's raw efficiency. Maybe the coolest thing about Flesh and Blood is the fact that your cards do four different things, you know, all your cards, with the exception of, like, you know, non-blocks and whatever else is weird. And so it's like, okay, look at these four numbers, and there's almost limitless different combinations of blocking, pitching, and playing that I could do with these cards. And how do I find the one where my math is the most on my side? So I've won this turn, or I've done as much damage as I can this turn. I think most people are familiar with, like, the, you know, the wounding blow example, but basically these Flesh and Blood cards, if you haven't heard.
Wounded Bull, right?
Nope, Wounding Blow. Wounded Bull is the Bull Lander Michael Hamilton.
Oh, shit.
Card. Oh, my God. I know, right? It's so silly.
I interrupted you for literally no reason. I'm so sorry.
No, it's okay. Just make sure you don't, like, start a Flesh and Blood podcast or anything.
Okay.
So basically, Flesh and Blood cards at their most base have this axis that they're on where they equate to essentially a value. I just gave a shout out to Wounding Blow if you want to look at that. But the example I like to talk about is Raging Onslaught. So Raging Onslaught is a card from Welcome to Wraith, a generic. And we'll, I guess we'll look at the, let's look at the yellow, because I ran the yellow once at a calling, so I got a soft spot.
I did
for
too.
It. The yellow Raging Oz, you did
yeah,
too?
Yeah, first calling I ever went to. Calling Orlando when Nationals was in Orlando.
Why? Why?
Because, I don't remember, Prism was really good, and, like, I was asking, I, like, had some random, like, 6 attack 2 block in my deck, and someone was like, you should run Raging Onslaught because it blocks 3. And I was like, how much could that matter? I literally said that. I was like, how much does that matter? It's so much. I was on Bolton, obviously. I had Pursuit of Knowledge in my deck. I was like, I got to charge cards. I might as well draw more.
Dude.
Like, let's.
I've also run Pursuit of Knowledge at the calling. So, yeah, I'm with you there.
Yeah, go ahead.
But, yeah, anyways, yellow Raging Onslaught. 3 cost, pitches for 2, blocks 3, and attacks for 6. So if you take up the number, if you add up the numbers of it pitches for 2, it attacks for 6, and it blocks for 3, you get 11. And then you subtract the 3 that it costs from that, you get 8. And that's what I'm talking about when I say, like, they have this axis of 8 that they're built on. And for generic cards and pretty much any card that has no text, you should get this 8 value, especially if you look at the older cards. Mm-hmm. This is, like, what they're built around. And then things kind of just go from there. that you don't necessarily need to know that to, you know the turn math or, you know, do turn math, but I think that's, like, a good place to start this discussion.
Yeah, no, that makes a ton of sense. And that's so, like with Wounding Blow, it attacks for 4, blocks 3, that's 7, pitches for 1, so that's 8. It makes sense. How about
that? Yeah, it costs 0.
That's cool.
Oh, really? Look at that. I just taught you something. And so, I mean, that is, like, it's, like, interesting the first time you learn it, but it gets really interesting when you start thinking of cards with on-hit effects, because then it, like, you know, gives you a sneak peek at, like, what LSS values different things. Like, Snatch adds up to 7, but it's got its on-hit effect of drawing a card.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Dude, this is all that. This explains at its core why I was, like, for, like, 2 weeks, so stuck on that new card Standing Order. It's basically a Wounding Blow, but you can, like, sync a card from your arsenal to give it +2 attack and +2 defense, so it, like, could be a popper. So, like, its floor is it's worth, like, 8, or, like, its space card is worth 8, like Wounding Blow. But if you activate its ability, it's maybe doing something cool for you, but you're, like, you're making it worth, like, less than 8 total, I guess. So that's
true.
Why, like, it's
that
not
is cool.
So, like, the card, I thought, like, the card was really cool, but I cut it because it's not a light card and screwed up some Via the Vanguard hands. So, anyways.
you asked me how I'd explain turn math. It was basically, it's, you know, doing the math in the 4 cards in your hand to come out so you have the most mathematical value possible. That's kind of how I would define it. But what I'm curious, like, why I'm really excited to have this conversation is not, like, because I think our 25 listeners or whatever you said, I don't think we're, like, you know, the most knowledgeable people in the world that are going to, like, explain these little tricks that are going to make you better at math than everyone else. Yeah. Like, it's pretty basic algebra a lot of the time. I just think it's a really interesting discussion, and I know I would be interested in hearing other people talk about it. So I kind of want to get in your head, Nick. Like, if you sit down and you've got these four cards in front of you, you've drawn up, you know, it's early mid game. Like, what are you looking at and thinking about? Like, what is going on in your head to decide block, don't block? And I know you're going to talk about Bolton because you ramble about Bolton, but not just Bolton, like in limited.
Yeah. Even.
Like, what are you thinking about?
I mean, let's just go with like the middle of a game, like in the middle of a game. Cause that's when, that's when there's usually not the most tension, but like the most back and forth. Right. And I would say like the,
and you have the most wiggle room. Yeah. Like, you can still afford to take damage if you want to.
And I would say it, like, it depends on a few different things, but I'll try to stick with like limited example. And I'm not the best limited. I'm like fine and limited. I'm the king of like 2-1-ing a pod barely by the skin of my teeth. But whatever. I'm like a middling. I would call myself a middling limited player. But so like in heavy hitters, right? If I am playing warrior and I have like an attack reaction, I'll kind of like value. I'll be like, okay, I want to play this attack reaction because I think I can like sneak damage across, right? It's not just like face up. I might be able to like, why am I already on this road? Mm-hmm. I'm going to pause and rewind. In the middle of a game, I literally just the basic math is like,
okay,
how do I get the most numbers out of this? Is the best, like if I block with two cards, is sending two cards like the best course of action? Or if I hold on to a card, is that card worth more on offense than it is defense? And it's literally just like, if a card is worth more on defense than it is offense, I will block with that card. And that's kind of it. There are exceptions to that, obviously. Like maybe a card can help set up, right? And like if I in a draft and I've drafted a deck to have a specific synergy, maybe I have to hold on to a card to like, I don't know, create a certain type of token or something. And then like, expect to draw into one of like the synergistic things that I drafted. But I always start with like, what's the math? Unless I draw something that's like, unless I like draw a blade flurry or whatever. It's like, okay, I'm not blocking with that. Like, I'm going to play that for 4 damage at some point.
Yeah. I mean, blade flurry is a good example. Because if you attack with your weapons twice, it's worth 4 on offense and 3 on defense. Mm-hmm. Because that was kind of my question that I was going to follow up with you, is because you said, yeah, I'm going to play my cards. They're worth more on offense than defense. But, like, how do you determine that? Like, what goes into your thinking when they're, like, you know, say someone is sending, like, a vanilla 7 damage at you or something. Like, what are you thinking about?
If they're just sending a vanilla 7 damage, I'll start with just, okay, I want to block some of this. And then from there, how much should I block? What I end up a lot on Unlimited is like, all right, I have to like, I can really only use these 2 cards on offense this next turn. So I'm going to block with these other 2. And then like
if you don't have more than one.
If I don't have more, yeah. Like if I don't have more than one action.
Yeah.
But again, it's like, there's also the time, like sometimes the best thing to do is to maybe sacrifice some turn value early to be able to arsenal a card, right? And then like arsenal that card and it'll make a future hand better. But yeah, it's like, it's so hard to explain. It's really hard to explain. But
let me tell you like what I think about, like, cause obviously it's that like making your cards worth more is the goal, right?
Yeah.
And you said if they're worth more on offense than defense, then I'm going to attack with them, which is true. And you could say the same thing. If they're worth more than defense than on offense, you're going to block with them. That's true. The way that I like to think about it is I usually try and base my turns around like a 0 value, because, you know, in theory, my opponent's cards should be worth the same thing. So I usually start with like a 0 value and I try and get above it. And that tells me that I'm like, you know, gonna win the turn cycle or whatever, even though there's way more to it than that. But like, let's say that I've got like a pretty typical hand, and I'm gonna use Reinar as an example, but I don't think this is like unique to Reinar. I've got a typical hand where I can present 6 damage on offense, right? say it's like a red pack hunt or something. Azalea. I'm playing Azalea. She shoots an arrow at me. It doesn't have dominate, so I can block as much as I want. It's 8 damage laced with blood rot. So if I my first option is I block 12 with my whole hand. And then I take 0 and I push 0 because I didn't even threaten damage towards Azalea. So I take 0 and I push 0. So I didn't win. We're both at 0. My second option is I block none and I push 6 because I don't only have one action point. So I can't do anything more than the pack on anyways. Mm-hmm. So then I'm losing. That's minus 2. The best option with all the context out is I block 6 with 2 of my cards, which would mean I'm taking 4 damage because she's coming for 8 with a lace with blood rot. So I'm taking 2, and then I'm taking 2 from the blood rot pox at the end mm-hmm. of the turn. So I'm taking 4 damage, but then I'm sending a pack hunt. So then I'm presenting 6. So I'm up 2 in that small cycle right there.
Yeah. So it's about you're always thinking in terms of like winning the turn, cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, and there's like more to it than just that. Like if you do what I just said, like every single turn and you come out on top every single turn, it does not mean you're going to win the game because the way tempo works and things like that, your opponent could be doing the same math. And as long as your cards are worth more on offense than they are on defense, you could always come out on top. But that's where I like to start, because when you're in the midst of a tournament, you know, sometimes it's too big to do too much. And that kind of can keep me grounded in the moment. Like, okay, you know, it's round 4. Azalea shooting laced with blood rot. What do I do right now?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes a ton of sense. My first suggestion I have for you is to run Soul Bond Resolve, because then you charge and the blood rot only does 1. It's better for you.
I'll think about it.
No, that makes a ton of sense. I'm a little, I feel a little betrayed because you just threw me into the fire. I feel like you had a whole thing prepared and you explained it very well. So I appreciate that. So yeah, our listeners are going to be like, man, this Kong guy really knows his stuff. Nick, like, how has he ever won a game in his life?
Yeah, Nick texted me a picture of his notes like 3 days ago, and I was like, I'm not going to look at those because I want to have an authentic discussion where I hear it for the first time.
Yeah, and I think like so back to limited too. It's just like it really comes down to, and obviously like so much of this depends on like the game state, right? I would love to do an episode where we talk about, because you hear that term all the time, like, oh. We said it last week a couple times, talking about like the finals approach. We're like, oh, you saw him like evaluating the game state. And I feel like there's like, again, it's similar to this conversation. It's like simple topic, but really there's like so many layers to it. Especially if you are the kind of person who plays a hero and only that hero, and you have seen everything 1,000 mm-hmm. times, you just like keep seeing little nuances in game state. So anyways, I think a lot of this in like turn math discussion is contextual, but the basis that I typically go with is kind of like what I was saying earlier of like, all right, how can I get the best math, the best numbers out of this hand? And then yeah, which is that similar to, I think that's probably ends up being the same thing as looking at it through like the trying to win the turn cycle.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, no, I think that like what I do is not different from what you do. That's just like the whole 0 thing is kind of how I'm able to like take big numbers and like make them more manageable in my brain.
Yeah, no, that makes a lot of sense. I might start trying to do that. We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I mean, try it out for one game on Talishar and see how it works.
Yeah.
I do want to point out too, before I get off topic, before I forget to say this, because someone's gonna think I'm an idiot. I was trying to do my example like without like taking weapons out of it, because I do realize I could just like block the 9 on the 8 on the blood rod and not.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Yeah. Just thinking, just our cards. What did just our cards do? No equipment, no weapons. Yeah.
But I mean, I guess that is a good point, though. I guess I didn't even mean to bring this up now, but that is a good point. That weapons are real good. Weapons. When you're talking about turn math.
Dude, do you want to know why I didn't even like think about that? Because I have Raiden and it just swings for 0 unless I do other things. So yeah, weapons are good. Dang, maybe I should play a freaking different hero that has weapons.
Hatchets? Maybe you should
play Hatchets. Yeah, dude. Yeah, Hatchets Olympia. Dude, speaking of turn math, I played a game with Hatchets Olympia the other day. They just like whatever, like hopped on Talishar, played a Katsu. Obviously, they're not blocking. I'm winning all my wagers. My average value per turn was like 18 and a half. And I was like, what? Is Olympia busted? Like, this is crazy. So yeah, turns out the Hatchets and Valiant Dynamo is just like good.
Yeah, I don't think it's Olympia. I think it's Hatchets and Valiant Dynamo.
And yeah, when all of your wagers are winning and stuff is Olympia, it's like you got your cash ins. I had multiple hands where I was like, block 12, have two vigor tokens and an agility, and I literally zero cards, swing five with the Hatchets. It was awesome.
That is cool.
But yeah, anyways. So I don't know how to, because I have a list of like kind of notes that I wanted to talk about for this topic with in regards to Bolton specifically. How should I just like jump in? Should I just like go in order and like say one and we can like kind of take turns? What do you think?
You want to talk about Bolton specifically?
Or just like we could,
as an example,
like giving theory. You good examples of or good examples that I think kind of can paint a picture in people's mind on like turn math and like what it means. Cause it's like, cause there is the school of thought that like calculating the turn math and doing the highest average value on every single turn cycle is the end all be all in the game. And like the best decks will always just do that every time. I don't think it's always that simple. I think it's very hero dependent. I think it's very matchup dependent. So one thing I wanted to talk about is like how, like for Bolton specifically, the way I think about my turn value, because that's just a note, turn math, turn value. I would say those terms are pretty interchangeable.
Yeah, same thing. Yeah.
But yeah, how you think about your turn value for me as Bolton, like changes. So like one example is like for if I'm playing against a Fi, it's like, I want to go second. And that is just like, I need to just do the best numbers the whole match. Every turn, I need to just...
You guys just count it.
Yes, we're just counting. We're playing Math Simulator. Whereas compared to, like, Kasai, if I'm playing Kasai in that Warrior Mirror, none of her cards buff my attacks. None of them turn on my hero ability. If I try to just play that turn-by-turn value game, like, I'm going to lose every single time. So I have to be willing to sacrifice turn value on to set up for future turns. So like maybe I have a turn where it's like I block 11 or block, let's say block 13. So I block like with three cards and a sink below. Right. And then I have another turn where it's like, okay, I'm going to block a 9 and then arsenal a card. So I had 13. That's pretty good. 9, not so good, whatever. Kind of have to stave her off a little bit, but then a turn or two later, I come back with a Via the Vanguard turn and I threaten 27. Right. And that's like, I guess, so there's like the turn by turn approach and then like the burst damage approach. And it's like matchup dependent in my mind. And some matchups for Bolton, specifically Bolton in the Warrior Mirrors, like those are like burst damage matchups where like the turn by turn value isn't continuous. Maybe on average, it'll average out to be 14 or 15 or something, whatever. Things go really well. But it's like, I'll have a turn cycle where it's like, maybe my turn cycle was like 8 and I had to arsenal or like filter a card or pitch a card for later.
Charge your soul.
Yeah. And like, there are turns where it's like, literally I like block with a couple cards, arsenal a card and like pitch a card to Iron Song Versus just to get it out of my hand. Cause it's like, all right, that card's not good for my game plan right now. I need something else. So yeah, you just kind of have to send it away. And like, because you have to play like that in some matchups with Bolton, that's why those matchups typically are some of the most difficult ones. But yeah, anyways, so.
No, that makes sense. And another, I think, example that goes with your burst damage phrase is like fatigue, right? There are lots of decks, Guardians come to mind, Arachne, where you could come out on top in the math that I was discussing earlier. Like for 12 turn cycles in a row, you come +2, you deal them 24 damage, and then you look down, you have no cards in your deck, and you're like, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Because they fatigued me.
Yeah.
And so that's an example of like turn math not being the be all end all.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you outvalue them by a couple, but you never kill them.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, there's one way to win. It's not outvalue them consistently. It's
exactly. Are there any specific, like, well, so I think that, like, the end game, the way you have to think about turn math ends up, like, it becomes different. I don't know exactly, like, how to describe it, but, like, navigating the end game, I think, is the most important part of playing Flesh and Blood. I think I've heard somebody say, like, Daniel Rakowski, maybe, he's like, yeah, like, winning the end game is, like, that's what matters. Like, you have to know how to play your end game. You have to be able to win your end games and stuff. And it's like, sometimes the turn math has to be a little bit different. Do you have, like, I don't know, we can get into that in a second, but do you have anything, like, specific about Reinar maybe that you want to talk about?
In the end game or just in general?
We can wait on the end game thing.
I mean, what's specific to Reinar is things like, I mean, mostly related to his hero ability, which mostly having to do with Intimidate, because Intimidate has no value, mathematically speaking, unless you're killing them.
Do you put a number on Intimidate or not? Like, when you are doing it?
When I'm doing the math that I was explaining earlier, I don't. But if things are close, I'll let it, like, tip things one direction or the other. Especially if it, like, is a matchup where I really think it's going to matter. Mm-hmm. Like, if they run D-reacts, you know, Intimidate is stronger. Or if, you know, I have an agility token or something somehow, and I have, like, an Intimidate into a CNC or something like that. Mm-hmm. But I usually don't let it matter too much unless it's, like, the end game, like you were talking about. That in that case, you know, like, one example would be Blue Barraging Beatdown that people might know. It's Intimidate and +2 damage, and it blocks for 3. So it's a block card a lot of by game because it blocks for 3 and gets +2 damage. So you're trading down. When it's not a block card is when you could, like, you know, kill them because it's not +2 damage. It's +5 mm-hmm. damage if it's +2 and the one card in their hand they can't block mm-hmm. with.
Yeah. And I think, like, yeah. So that's, again, Intimidate something to you, like, mentioned it for a second, but it is, like, matchup dependent. Like, if you're playing as a Victor.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, every time you draw an Intimidate card or whatever, like, intimidating is probably very, like, front of mind. It's like, ooh, I could Intimidate their Test of Strength. Mm-hmm. Like, and they are just, like,
mm-hmm.
in the torture chamber if you do that. So.
Yep. Every time you Intimidate a Test of Strength, an angel gets its wings. Dude,
I believe that. So yeah, I think, like, in the end game specifically, I guess we could talk about that if you want to.
I think you have more thoughts on it than I do, but I'd love to hear them, especially if you have an example.
Well, I wrote on my little notepad, turn math in the end game. And I think I have thoughts, but I guess, card I want to talk about specifically is, like, Courageous Steel Hand, which is a card that, so for those of you who don't play Bolton, it's a card where it's an attack reaction, and it says, if you've charged this turn, target attack gets +3. Any attack. Doesn't have to be a warrior attack. So, like, you could Courageous Steel Hand a CNC, which is nasty. I do it, like, maybe once every 30 games, but it's awesome. But anyway, like, that card is one, and this could possibly be, like, a trap I play myself into, but, like, in the warrior class, basically, like, when you are in that, like, both heroes are around, like, 10 life or so or less. It's like, there are a lot of times where I could, like, they block a little bit. I could, like, force through some more damage with a Courageous Steel Hand, but it wouldn't kill them, right? It would, like, put them to 5. And I'm like, no, like, I'm mm-hmm. going to just, like, I'm going to hold this and I'm going to, like, and maybe this is, like, getting, maybe I definitely tunnel vision on, like, this sometimes, where it's like, I'm going to win the game with Courageous Steel Hand. And I would say a lot of the times it's, like, worth it to wait until you can put them as low as possible, right? But again, that's a situation where it's like, I have that 3 value in my hand and I choose not to take it on that specific turn cycle. I choose to wait, right? If and that's assuming an opponent, like, blocks or whatever, or is blocking, and I want to just like get over, or yeah, they're not going to swing back with like five cards or something. Maybe they block with two cards, just going to send two cards back. I'm like, okay, I'll hold on to this value. I'll be able to take what they're going to send back, and like this will be more effective on the next turn. So mm-hmm. yeah, that's a kind of an example I thought of. Hopefully it was a good one. I don't know.
No, it makes sense. You talked about it playing you into a trap. Is part of the trap that it requires multiple cards to play Courage of Steeland?
That is, yeah, that's like, sometimes, yeah.
If they rip cards out of your hands, it could get stuck there.
Yeah, definitely. So there, again, it's matchup dependent. Like there's some matchups where it's like, no, this is just a race. Like I just need to do the damage, mm-hmm. and you take the damage, whatever. It also blocks too, which is why that card goes in and out of my deck 100 times every month. It's like, oh, it blocks too. I hate when it blocks. Basically, every time I lose a game because it didn't block three, mostly against an Azalea, I'm like, no, I'm taking that card out. Don't need it. I'm going to put in E-Strikes or something. But yeah. But now that I'm talking about this like out loud, I'm like talking myself out of my initial thoughts. Almost.
So you're talking yourself into just playing it more mathematically instead of trying to arsenal it and kill them with it?
Like, probably. But again, it just, like, depends. It's, like, so hard to talk about this without playing the game. I don't know.
Yeah, but because the situation I'm envisioning is you, like, you know, you threaten to put them down to five health. Say you're at, like, 10. And they say no blocks. And you've got an empty arsenal. So you could, like, Courage of Steeland, put them to two, right? Or you could arsenal it.
Yeah. I would probably... Like, if it was about getting them to two, I'd probably do that. Because when somebody's at two, Bolton can close the game very, very well. Because all of a sudden, they have to trigger your hero ability on every single attack. And your math, and then your turn math goes through the freaking roof, right? Like,
even if it's somebody who doesn't trigger hero ability, like a warrior?
No, that's different. Against a warrior, I have to end the game. That's a matchup where, like, I have to end the game, like, with a reaction of some kind. Or, like, with a tenacity or something. Like... Or a huge V of the Vanguard turn. It's like, I need to get that warrior to like 10, and I need to threaten 25. Or like, again, not every game plays out like that, but in general, my game plan is, or if we get to that state, if I'm playing against a Dorinthea or a Kasai, and we get to a game state where we're both sub 10 and we're trading back and forth, I'm not feeling great. Like, I need a miracle. Mm-hmm. I need to have three cards to my soul. And draw my Celestial Cataclysm to like get back some tempo, right? It's like that's kind of my out there, but yeah. So I don't even know if I'm making any sense. Whatever.
No, you are, and I think that's interesting. Like decision points like that, I think are super interesting, and it's more than just math because the three value is like three value in your arsenal, in your hand, on their health. You know.
Yeah.
But like getting the most out of it and like making it efficient is interesting.
Yeah.
One thing I think we should talk about before we wrap up is like when it makes sense to trade down on turn math, which I know we've like touched on and stuff when you shouldn't like just focus on maximizing it, but like specifically times when you're like, well, this card comes for four, this card comes for blocks for three, but I'm going to block with it. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, this card attacks for seven, this card attacks for six, I'm going to use the one that attacks for six instead. Mm-hmm. Do you have any examples of that? And the one thing that I'm thinking of, where my last example came from, is, you know, CNC.
Yeah.
I think a lot of times, you know, I run seven power attacks in my deck. There's a lot of times where it makes sense to attack with CNC instead of those, especially if you're playing like an aggro hero or some hero or someone, just to force them to block. And I think a lot of that comes down to, again, turn math, but instead like the other way around, mm-hmm. right? So I've got like, say a seven power attack and a CNC in my hand against a Fi. Most of Fi's cards are worth more on offense than on defense. So if I make him use his cards on defense by playing a CNC, I might still be winning in turn math, even though I'm choosing to sacrifice 1 point on my side of things, mm-hmm. if that makes sense.
Yeah. Yeah, that does make sense. And I think I have a good example.
Yeah, let's hear it.
It's like, well, again, this is me just thinking. This situation would end up being me trading down on value, right? So it's like, let's just say I have a a V of the Vanguard, two light cards, and three other light cards, one of them being like an Illuminate, which is a 0/4, blocks 3. But if it hits, it goes into my soul. That's another, like with Turn Math with Bolton, like you have to consider soul. But we're just going to save that because we were already like over time.
Yeah.
But it's like, there's time, it's depending on the matchup. Some matchups, like against Fi, I probably just play that. I probably just like pitch a card, charge a card, and swing via the Vanguard for 4, Raiden for 4, Illuminate for 5. Actually, I don't even know if I'd ever do that. But anyways. But the math I would trade down on is probably like blocking with those two other cards, just sending the Illuminate by itself, and then arsenaling the via the Vanguard. Because in a lot of matchups, it's like, no, a middling via the Vanguard turn isn't going to get me there. I need a via the Vanguard into Valiant Thrust turn that threatens 19 damage. Or I need a via the Vanguard Bolting Blade Illuminate turn that threatens 25 damage. Like, that's what I need to get there in this matchup. So it's just, yeah, I will, depending on the matchup, very often trade down on my math in order to manufacture a situation that's more explosive.
Yeah, which usually comes in the form of like combos, essentially what you're describing.
Yeah.
Like having certain cards together, even if those cards are just V and Tunic or something.
Yeah.
I think sometimes it makes sense to trade down too when you're playing towards your power cards. Mm-hmm. Like that's kind of what you're describing,
exactly,
you know?
Exactly that.
Like if you have a power card in Arsenal and Uzuri attacks you, you know, for 3, the stealth card, and she's like threatening her little tricky tricks.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're like, you know what? I've got 20 cards left in deck. If I don't play out this Blood Earth Bellow that I have in Arsenal, it's my last one in my deck. Like, I'm probably not going to get there. Mm-hmm. I should just block 6 on this and not present as much as I was going to, but keep my win condition alive.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I just keep having so many thoughts specifically about Bolton, and I'm like, I can't start because we'll be here forever. but it's like, I want to wrap up the conversation soon, so I won't get too into it. But as a Brute player, how does Scab Skins impact your?
Oh, geez.
How does Scab Skins impact how you? Think about things, which has been, it was a hot topic on Twitter today. Tarek posted his thread. So if you're, you know, horribly online like the rest of us, you probably saw Tarek's Twitter thread.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're right. I don't want to go on too much about it. If people want to know about Scab Skins, they should do 2 things. No, 3 things, because I'll shout myself out. Why not? they should finish listening to me, but they should also, go read Tarek's thread that you pointed out, and then go watch the Brute Math videos on Savage Lands News YouTube. Those are both really great. He hasn't put one out for a few months now. I think the last one was like November or October or something. He'll probably get another one out soon. But those videos are great, and they have like specific lines with scabs they discuss in them. But there's like some real quick math that they go over that, you know, I've heard discussed on Discord for a long time now. That you can do at the table if you're like a, you know, newer Brute player and you're not really sure how to value your scab skins and when you should roll and stuff like that. And this math is really for just when you are left with extra cards in your hand, because choosing when to block and when not to block for scabs is really tricky. You usually, and like, what's a stronger word than usually? It's not always, I don't know. The majority of the time, just block if you can block. You shouldn't save cards to not block, because you're going to roll scab skins. The exception being like, if you've got like, you know, double intimidate and you're about to get fatigued or something. Ooh, I don't know.
Could I share an example to illustrate that we talked about earlier real quick? Like, sure. 10 seconds. But like, I see KOs do this a lot where it's like in the middle of the game and they block maybe with one card, but then they roll scabs just to like send an attack and then play a cast bones. And it's like, in that situation, you should just block with the cast bones. Like, you should not risk rolling a 1 just because you might be able to play the cast bones. Like, that's what you're saying, right?
Yeah.
And again, it probably depends.
And I don't know. Yeah. And the numbers, I think if you ran straight math, the numbers might say to keep Cast Bones, and to play it.
Oh, shoot.
I'm not really sure. It, because, you know, Cast Bones is like, what, 0 for 6 or something like that? It
could be 6 and 8? An action point. Shit, maybe you should run. Maybe you
should roll. Exactly.
Never mind. Disregard.
Yeah. yeah, I'm not really sure. But, I mean, to my point about, like, this is only when you're kept with cards in hands, it would apply in your scenario if you, like, you know, drew up from Blood Rush into a Cast Bones, which I know, you know, happens with KO sometimes. So they'll just, you know, play an attack and then Cast Bones. Mm. But anyways, the math I was going to get to was what you can do is you can take one half the value of your turn. Like, so when I say value, I mean damage presented, because, like I said, this is only on your turn. One half the damage presented on 2 action points, and then add that to 1/3 the damage on 1 action point, and then compare that to what you would do if you just use your 1 action point to see if it would, if you would come out mathematically, you know, if you ran this turn infinite times and rolled infinite times on top, like the average value. A real basic example that comes up in Reinar a lot is you've got a blue, you've got your tunic, and you've got your claws. So you could, you know, roll scabs to try and claw twice, or you could just claw once. If you add up all possible values of rolling, you know, your 0 through 6, the average comes out to 4, which is higher than 3 of just clawing. So the math would say roll. But that's like the basic math you can do at the table. It's not perfect, but it's simple and straightforward. One half the value on 2 action points plus 1/3 the value on 1 action point.
Mm. Yeah, I think that's... Who would have thought the brute players are sitting there doing long division in their heads at the table? Who would have thought?
It's mostly not me. I'm just on Discord cribbing from other brutes. Like I said, check out Savage Man's news and other places, I'm sure.
I think... And yeah, we're going to go ahead and like and wrap up. But I honestly think I was like, I think I'm more confused now than I was when we started this conversation, which is like,
I know, which right?
Is like, because like, again, it's one of those topics, like it's so at the surface, it is so simple. It's like, okay, this hand combined, like if I block with 2 cards and attack with 2 cards, I could do, I got a 14 value. If I just attack with everything, I could only have 9. So you should block with some and attack with some. It's like, that's like, it's so simple. Well, then it's just like, whenever, when you're actually playing the game and you're just like, yeah, I don't know. When you're actually playing the game, it just like kind of goes, you go into different spots where it's like, you need to set up, you need to play to your synergies, you need to do different things. Like you need to pick your spots to sacrifice. Yeah. To trade down. You need to pick your spots to trade down and you, and realize like, it's okay to trade down sometimes. If that means you're playing to more, that means you're playing for more of your win conditions, I guess.
I mean, Flesh and Blood is a great game. It's not Math Simulator, you know, math is the base, the math you need to be doing every single turn. Like, almost instinctually, like you start there and then you go from there and you know, see where it leads you.
Yeah. Awesome. Cool. Well, yeah, this was a really fun conversation. So,
yeah, it was, I think we should play a game and then we should talk about our math as we're playing and think that'd be interesting.
We probably should do that. We could. All right. Yeah, we could, or we could like record. Yeah. We could talk about our math as we go, or like record a game and like watch it back together and talk about the math. That'd probably be a good exercise for us to do. But oh, by the way, news for all the people out there. I locked in my list for Battle Hardened Atlanta. I'm not making any changes. I'm not going down the rabbit hole anymore. I printed out my list, packed it in my bag already. We're like 2 weeks out.
What if Dromai rotates?
Even better. Even better.
You're not changing the list, keep the poppers in.
Yeah, because at this point I took out the United We Stands anyways. And my extra poppers are just Amnesia and CNC, and I want Amnesias for Katsu and Prism, and I want CNCs for like Fi and Azalea. So it's like we're gonna just leave them in. So I'm not thinking about it anymore. You're about to make me go down the rabbit hole. Not doing it. I'm not gonna do that. So
Okay.
Anyways.
You're going to win.
Oh, yeah. I already called my shot last week, so it'll be real embarrassing if it doesn't happen. 27 people will know about it. So, all right. Well, thanks, everybody, for listening. So, yeah, we'll be back next Sunday. Hopefully Ryan will be able to join us.